Welcome to Flights of Fantasy, your romanticy podcast book club. I'm Christina, joined by my book besties Kim and Anna, and together we're diving into the characters, theories, lore, and magic behind all your favorite fantasy romance books.
Hi, book besties. We are so excited to be here discussing A Court of Mist and Fury, the second book in the ACOTAR series by Sarah J. Maas.
Yay!
And just a reminder, we will be breaking up each book into multiple episodes. With that being said, and because we have read the series in its entirety multiple times, like 5 times over.
Yep.
We will be discussing each book with the knowledge of the entire series. But before we give an official spoiler warning, Christina has some announcements.
Yay!
I surely do. Okay, so first off, we want to give a big thank you, a big hug to everyone who's already rated and reviewed the show. If you haven't had a chance yet, please, please, please take a moment and do so. It takes like 3 seconds and we will just send you the biggest hug. We thank you so, so, so much for doing that. Also, before we dive in, a quick reminder that if you love the pod and want even more from your book besties, we have got you covered over on Patreon. Woo! We have 2 tiers to choose from. Tier 1 is just $5 a month and gets you every episode 1 day early and ad-free, plus access to our monthly book chat video episodes. And Tier 2 book betches for $10 a month gets you all that, plus a shout-out on an episode, the full video version of every episode, our entire back catalog of chapter chat read-along videos, and exclusive access to our SJM Deep Dive series, where we deep dive characters, couples, and scenes from all of Sarah J. Maas's series.
Yay!
This month, we are discussing one of our favorite Crescent City leading ladies. If you have read Ho Fast, you know who we mean. So come check that out.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes. So come join our Patreon fam at patreon.com/fightsoffantasypodcast or click the link in our show notes. Now, speaking of Patreon, Kim, let's shout out some patrons.
Let's shout out some book betches. So like Christina said, one of the perks of being our tier two book betches is that you get a shout out in one of our episodes. And in this episode, we are going to be shouting out some very special patrons, starting with our trivia queen, Trisha.
Yay!
Yeah, yeah, yay!
Hi, Trisha. Yeah. As well as Jen B. and Angelique Franklin. Thank you all so much for supporting us. It truly means the world to us, and we love you guys so, so much.
Yes, thank you.
We love you. Thank you.
Okay, are we ready to dive in?
Yes.
Okay, so spoiler warning for every book in the ACOTAR series. Let's go.
Yes.
Okay, so where we left off in the last episode. So, Feyre has left the Spring Court after Tamlin locked her up. Rude.
Rude.
Rhysand has introduced her to Velaris and the Inner Circle, and the King of Hybern is threatening to bring down the wall separating the human realms from Prithian, and Feyre has agreed to start working with Rhysand and his court to help stop this from happening.
All right, let's start off by talking about one of the most powerful arcs in this book, which is our girl Feyre's healing journey. Mm. Because it's not about some magical fix or grand rescue. This is about her reclaiming her sense of self after everything she's endured. And Feyre's healing doesn't come from being saved. It comes from being seen.
Mm.
Well, how novel. Tam Tam, my God, take some notes.
Yep.
She's no longer a prize or a project. She's a woman carrying power, rage, and grief, trying to rebuild after Under the Mountain, which is exactly when Rhysand steps in, not to fix her, but to stand beside her.
Mm-hmm.
He challenges her, supports her, and meets her vulnerability. And he doesn't just tell her that she matters. He shows her that she matters over and over again. By letting her become whoever she chooses to be. Again, choice. All the while, never asking her to hide her emotions. Again, Tamlin, take some notes. Basically, he's saying, you don't have to be fine, but I'm not going anywhere. Oh my God, do we love him.
I love that so much.
Yeah.
Not that he actually says that, but like, that feeling.
Yeah.
Yes, that's what he's giving her. Absolutely. So with that in mind, let's walk through some of the key moments that mark the beginning of Feyre's healing journey. Scenes that show her stepping out of survival mode and starting to confront who she really is now in the aftermath of everything she's endured. So this quote from our first Thought for a Thought game with Rhys really sums up where Feyre is at the starting of her healing journey. Quote, I'm thinking that I was a lonely, hopeless person, and I might have fallen in love with the first thing that showed me a hint of kindness and safety. And I'm thinking maybe he knew that, maybe not actively, but maybe he wanted to be that person for someone, and maybe that worked for who I was before. Maybe it doesn't work for who what I am now.
Oh, my God.
I love that line so much.
It's so good. The self-awareness from Faye right here, because like she's not just looking back at Tamlin and their relationship. She's looking back at the girl that she used to be and why it worked, who she was when the relationship worked and how she's now changed.
Yeah.
We've talked about that in our first ACOTAR episodes covering book one. And Sarah is very good at this, writing somebody, a love interest for the character who they need in the moment, in that book, to get through something.
Yes.
And then what they need and who they end up becoming later in the journey is not who they need forever.
Mm-hmm. Precisely.
Right? Because they change. And that, and the difference is they don't change together. They don't grow together.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And this is so great and so fun to see from her, actually, because it really feels like we're seeing her waking up from this fog. Like she's in a place of real support. And so it's allowing her to start understanding what's really happening and what happened to her. Mm-hmm. And for the first time, we see her, you know, start to reclaim herself, but even let others help her, like Cassian.
Oh, yes. I love this scene with her and Cassian in Akamath. It's always one of my favorite scenes to get to when I'm rereading. Mm-hmm. And it's when she and Cassian are sparring. And I specifically love it because of the use of physicality. Like, I mean, I know they're not actually in a boxing ring, but they're on like a sparring mat. Mm-hmm. And he's got like gloves up and she's punching into his gloves.
In my head, the rooftop, there's like full boxing rings on that rooftop. There's like two little boxing training rings.
Oh, really?
On the rooftop is how I picture it.
Actually, I don't picture rings like in a true boxing match. I picture like stone walls.
Ooh, interesting.
Which I feel like is actually pretty dangerous because you could hit your little head.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're good. They don't care. Yeah, I guess now that I think about it, it's not really a ring in my head. It's maybe like a pickleball court, but a little elevated and no net in the middle.
Yeah.
And they just are side by side, but there's little like, you know, hang areas in between.
It's a clay court because clay is red. And the House of Mist is red stone mountains.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
Canon.
Glad we figured that out. Okay.
We've got it.
Okay. So I love this scene specifically because of the use of physicality. And, you know, I actually think we talked about this years ago when we first covered the series, but it's a very clever and well-used acting tactic when you're in theater school and then when you are going on to do plays and stuff, that you use a physicality to then get to a specific emotional state. And it's a very like, I don't want to say it's not an easy hack, but it's something that a lot of actors use. For example, like if you want to feel like a sense, maybe your character is about to enter stage and there's like a sense of anxiety. Maybe somebody has died. It's a big kind of like traumatic moment that's about to happen. So what you might do backstage is run in place or run backstage because it elevates your heart rate, and elevating your heart rate mimics that feeling of anxiety. Mm. So then when you enter the stage, you're out of your head. And those emotions are like right there at the surface. And that's kind of what happens here with Feyre and Cassian. Mm-hmm. It's a cathartic release where she is punching and she is not thinking. She's not trying to be logical. She just is feeling. Mm-hmm. And all of those emotions, the anger, the like bitterness, the kind of sadness that she has been feeling that she really couldn't put into words after Under the Mountain just comes rushing up to the surface.
Mm-hmm. And it's such a beautiful parallel to Nesta and how physicality helps Nesta in Silver Flames.
The hike.
Yeah. And the stairs. The stairs are a huge part of Silver Flames.
And the training and everything.
And the training. And like we see that work so well for Nesta, and it's so beautiful to see it kind of work first for Feyre.
Yes. Yeah.
Because guys, exercise releases endorphins. Endorphins make you happy. Happy people don't kill their husbands.
Guys, they just don't.
They just don't.
I mean, if Elle Woods says it, it's true.
What more can we tell you?
It's science.
It's science.
Okay, but I love this. So she's punching into Cassian's fist and she's just, there's a whole inner monologue happening. Mm-hmm. But this is the quote that I want to read. I had done everything. Everything for that love. I had ripped myself to shreds. I had killed innocence and debased myself. And he had sat beside Amarantha on that throne. And he couldn't do anything. Hadn't risked it. Hadn't risked being caught until there was one night left. And all he'd wanted to do wasn't free me, but fuck me. And when Amarantha had broken me, when she had snapped my bones and made my blood boil in its veins, he'd just knelt and begged her. He hadn't tried to kill her, hadn't crawled for me. Yes, he'd fought for me, but I'd fought harder for him.
Wow.
Well said, Feyre.
It is such a good freaking moment.
Yeah.
And I think this kind of goes back to like the conversation that we had last week, I think, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago, but in the beginning of Akamath, Kim, that you had brought up, that, you know, she's in a different type of survival mode now. In the beginning of ACOTAR, she's in literal survival mode, no food, malnourished. And then this time, like in the beginning of Akamath, it's a mental state for her.
Yeah.
And she is wrecked herself.
Yeah.
As, you know, Rhysand calls her this illiterate human mm-hmm. who is supposed to save our realm.
Yeah.
Right? She went under the mountain to save the man she loved, and he couldn't get off his fucking ass to help her.
Yep.
That's the bottom line.
I will say, everything in that quote would feel a lot more realistic to me if Amarantha was his mate and he rejected the bond.
Sure.
Sure. Why can't you do something? Do something.
It is so confusing. I don't know how you defend that. I don't know how you explain that, because mm-hmm. there's really no excuse for it.
No.
In my mind.
There's nothing.
Cassian, at the end of this book, his wings are shredded and he is crawling to Nesta.
Crawling.
Crawling. Through crawling. Azrael's blood.
His brother's blood.
Yes.
Tamlin could never. I mean, truly.
Could never and would never.
Never.
No.
No. Okay, so I want to talk about the difference between how Rhysand treats Feyre and his interactions with her versus Tamlin.
Mm.
So I believe this quote is when they're going to go to dinner and with the Inner Circle for the first time and meet them, and she's nervous about it.
Yeah.
And this is what Rhysand says to Feyre. You say the word tonight and we come back here, no questions asked. And if you can't stomach working with me, with them, then no questions asked on that either. We can find some other way for you to live here. Be fulfilled regardless of what I need. It's your choice, Feyre.
I love this.
Wow.
Wow.
That's one of the best choice quotes, I think, really exemplifying his understanding for her need for choice and giving it to her in such a beautiful way.
Mm-hmm. And we will find some way for you to be fulfilled. Not, why don't you go find something in the house to do and pick up your little paints and paint? It's, we'll find some other way.
For you to be fulfilled.
Yes.
Tamlin was never worried or even thought about Feyre being fulfilled.
Mm-mm.
He was like, well, why wouldn't you be happy? You're here.
He was too wrapped up in himself.
Absolutely.
Like we talked about, his love was more about him,
yes,
and what he needed rather than how he could help Feyre.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And Rhys sees, like we've said also, that Feyre is a doer. She needs a purpose.
Yes.
And he sees that and recognizes it.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. He basically is saying to her, like, it's okay to not be okay, but it's not okay to hide forever.
Yes.
Like you guys have said, he wants her to reveal those emotions. He wants her to get her feelings out and not just keep them inside. And all Tamlin wanted to do was push it down, push it down, push it down. So Feyre was like, yes, let's push it down. Let's not let her win. But like Rhys said, no, she wins if you're broken.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get those feelings out. You have to get those emotions out.
I want to clock what you're saying right here. Listeners, clock what Kim is talking about and pin it. Because when we get to Akawar, there are some really interesting scenes with Cassian and Nesta that are very, I cannot wait to get to. So pin that conversation and that whole thought that Kim just said, because it's going to be so fun to like bring it back full circle.
Feyre is a lot more like Nesta than I remember. Like, it's so insane how we can reread this book so many times and I'm mm-hmm. still finding new things that I'm learning as I'm rereading. And I'm really noticing that, wow, okay, they are sisters. Like there is a lot about Feyre and Nesta that is more alike than I remember.
Yeah.
And that's why they butt heads.
That feistiness, that fire. Nesta is very on one end and Elaine is very on the other end of the mm-hmm. spectrum. And I always felt like Feyre was so middle of the road, like not passive, but not like super aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
But there are times where she is feisty and she is snapping back and she like has this fire in her that just rages. And I'm like, that's Nesta.
That's Nesta.
It is.
It is.
It absolutely is.
It's so interesting.
It's so fun.
So it's very obvious that Feyre is going through the stages of grief, right? There's mm-hmm. denial and then acceptance. And we are starting to see this acceptance within her of maybe who she used to be was the person Tamlin needed, like we've said, but who she is now is someone entirely different.
Yeah.
And it's in the summer court when she's with Tarquin on the pleasure barge, which we will get to in a little bit, that she realizes for the first time that she is actually feeling again. She is actually having an emotion. She was so numb after Under the Mountain. This is what Feyre says. I was unhappy, not just broken, but unhappy.
Mm.
An emotion, I realized. It was an emotion rather than the unending emptiness or survival-driven terror.
Wow.
Baby steps, you guys.
Baby steps.
It's not a positive emotion, but it's an emotion.
But we're feeling again.
We're on the right track.
We're on the right track to something.
Huge, huge. And to realize that.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
So, and we're obviously going to continue to see Feyre grow throughout the rest of this episode and then the next one. Christina, will you take us on a little field trip?
I love a field trip. Take us there, Christina.
Jump on the bus, friends.
Magic school bus time, guys.
Call me Miss Frizzle. Here we go. Okay.
God, that show is really good, guys. It does hold up.
Oh, I still think about the one where the kid ate the watermelon seed and they go into his.
Yep.
Okay.
A classic. classic.
Still, every summer.
I love it.
Okay, guys, let's go on a little field trip to the prison to meet a lovely old friend, the bone carver.
So pleasant.
What a chap. Okay, so if we remember, I was about to call him Bony. That's probably not good. Okay. Chappie, Bone Carver, who, if we remember, along with his siblings, the Weaver and Koshi, is a death god. Mm-hmm. Now, the prison itself, friends, let's talk about this creepy place. It's located inside one of the mountains, specifically on an island in the Western Isles. Reese notes, quote, "The prison is law unto itself. The island may even be an eighth court." What?
Very interesting.
Also, it falls under my jurisdiction, and my blood is keyed to the gates. Guys, the fact that all the way back in Akamath, Resand on page was like, it might be an eighth court. Excuse me.
What?
Excuse me. What?
Casual.
So early. Okay, yeah. Casual. Now I want you to pin all of that for next week's Mastermind, everybody. Stay tuned for that breakdown. Okay, let's go back to Feyre. She understandably panics on their first attempt to visit this place, which is very similar to Under the Mountain. So logically,
yeah,
that's going to be hard for our girl. She tries to be brave, but all her trauma just comes rushing back, and she looks at Reese and says, please. And Reese, being the most supportive king in all the land, stays true to his word, and no questions asked, he winnows her back to Velaris. But the next day, our sneaky little ancient one, Amryn, shows up and gives Feyre a necklace, claiming said necklace is what helped her escape from the prison. Spoiler alert, it's not. That's a lie, and it's just an old piece of jewelry that Reese gave her centuries ago.
I love Amryn.
And the reason Reese is looking at it saying she gave that to you is because he gave it to Amryn.
Yeah.
Also, it is probably strange to Reese that Amryn would give away her jewelry. If we remember the comparisons to her as a fire drake, she hoards jewels.
Yes.
Those are very important to her. You know, but hey, the fake news necklace works.
Yeah.
Gets her in there, she finds the strength, and she walks into the prison holding Reese's hand.
Oh!
Okay.
So cute.
So let's break down this first meeting with the Bone Carver. First of all, as we know, the Bone Carver chooses to appear differently to everyone. And while there's no in-canon explanation for why he picks who he does, I like to think he's so powerful that he immediately taps into your past, present, and future and picks the version that'll creep you out the most because he's bored and likes to be theatrical. But
that's canon to me.
That's great.
That's
canon. I love it.
God, I'm bored. Who could be the most dramatic thing I could turn into?
Who would creep them out the most?
He likes to see you squirm.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. But regardless, Feyre sees a young violet-eyed boy. Hello, Nyx. Oh. Now, fan theories with Christina. Some fans do question if this is actually Nyx or another future child, because Nyx, we know very specifically, has wings.
Yes.
And this child she sees does not. Now, could Nyx have learned to maybe take the wings away like his dad does?
Yeah.
Possibly. But also, we talk about the wings a whole lot in Akasoth, and we did change her anatomy. So, you know, who knows? Maybe it's a future child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But without a doubt, we can say it is their child, given later in Akawar, Feyre also notices that in addition to Reese's features, this child in front of her also has her mouth, her father's mouth. So, all right. Now to Reese, the carver appears as Jurian, specifically how Jurian looked right before Amarantha killed him. Interesting choice.
Yeah.
Now, Reese brings the carver a little offering, if you will. He brings Bony C, the bone that Feyre used to kill the Midengar worm, which I just want to pause real quick. So my question is, he was like, wow, my girl really made a statement with this bone. I'm going to take this home.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to put this in my suitcase. I'm going to just like clean it up. And I'm going to just
like, it's a
like,
seashell.
Yeah.
It's just a little seashell.
It's a memento from our time under the mountain, you know? What? But good thing he kept it.
Yeah.
Good thing. Because the bone carver agrees. But of course, it can't be that simple because he's a fantasy god in SJM. So he wants to play a little Q&A, a little truth for a truth game. Mm-hmm. All right. So let's run through the highlights of what we learn. So number one, the King of Hybern can resurrect Jurian using the cauldron. Uh-oh. But the cauldron's 3 feet were severed. Oh, no. And hidden across Prithian. Hence the temple attacks, including Gwyn's temple, as we learn in A Court of Silver Flames. Mm-hmm. Now, we also learn the only thing that can nullify the cauldron's power is the Book of Breathings. However, this book was split in half after the war, half with the Summer Court and half with the Mortal Queens.
Yes.
Okay. Now, the truths Feyre has to give for these little facts are very heartbreaking, especially to Reese. There's a part where she talks about how she was planning on turning the dagger on herself. And quote, there was something like devastation on his beautiful face. God, our sweet sweeties. But our favorite truth from Feyre is, quote, there was only that bond in the darkness. Resan's face had gone pale, his mouth a tight line. And when I was made anew, I followed that bond back to me. I knew that home was on the other end of it.
Mm. It's Resan.
I know.
He's your home.
So much.
God, he's your home.
It's so beautiful.
It's so beautiful. So good. It's great. Okay, so mission is a success. We got the info we needed. And, you know, it's so successful that Reese is like, I think Feyre's ready for another little adventure. So, you know, I think she's ready. We're going to test this she's a walking find my iPhone for the High Lord's hidden treasures theory. So that means the next stop on our Death God sibling tour is the Weaver. Let's go see the Weaver.
Oh, God. Let's go see the Weaver, you guys. Okay, so Reese sends Feyre to the Weaver's cottage to retrieve an object from inside that his mother hid there for safekeeping. Okay.
I love that.
Yeah, I'm like, okay.
It's so like brutal. I fucking love it.
So Feyre can't bring in any outside weapons because the Weaver will detect them. Resan tells Feyre not to touch anything that is not the object from the Night Court. Feyre enters and y'all, the Weaver's cottage is horrifying. It's so creepy. She's sitting in there weaving and singing some creepy song. It's so eerie. And Feyre's like creeping down the aisles, trying to like be like, where is it? Where is it? I don't feel it. And she's singing the song and it's she's trying not to breathe.
It's so scary. And honestly, she scares me more than the bone carver Bryaxis. We haven't really dealt with the other god brother yet. Yeah. But like, she's terrifying.
Terrifying.
It's like Hansel and Gretel on steroids.
Absolutely. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she's trying to retrieve the ring. Okay. So she follows the instructions. She gets the ring. Oh, no. The Weaver realizes there's been an intruder and she locks Feyre in. But Feyre essentially sets the entire place on fire. And she says, I was a wolf and I bit when cornered. Again, Nesta. It reminds me of Nesta.
Yes.
I absolutely love that line. Also, that Reese calls Feyre a wolf when she shapeshifts into Ianthe to go save Elaine in Akawar.
Yes.
The wolf parallels are insane.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So she sets the place on fire, which, shocker, only enrages the Weaver even more. And Feyre is forced to shimmy up the chimney to escape. Friends, when I tell you, absolutely not. I would have been like, Reese, you were hot while I knew you. Fare thee well. I am not going up that chimney. I'm not doing it. My claustrophobia would never allow it. I don't know what I would have done, but I'm not going up that chimney.
Because what is it made of, Kim?
I'm going to try not to gag when I say this, truly. I was reading over the outline and I was actually like gagging. It is slick with fat from burning human skin. And then it's also covered in human hair.
It's the worst case scenario. It's so disgusting. It's truly as if Sarah was like, what can make it like, grosser? Like, what could I possibly do?
Like, is she like breathing this stuff? Like, I just picture like a cat.
I don't know. I'm gagging. Stop.
You know a cat like coughs up a hairball?
I hate it.
Guys,
I hate
my
it.
Gag reflex can't handle this. I actually have to move on.
Move on.
So she's stuck in the chimney. Again, This was so stressful to read. Christine and I are like, it's triggering our claustrophobia. But
yep.
This is what she says. I was not a pet, not a doll, not an animal. I was a survivor and I was strong. I would not be weak or helpless again. I would not, could not be broken, tamed.
Yes.
Yes.
Did anyone else think of Miley Cyrus? She's like, I can't be tamed.
Yes, 100%.
Oh, God, tamed. Okay,
so good.
Just like Miley Cyrus, she can't be tamed. Okay, so she gets out onto the roof, which is covered in human hair. It's thatched with human hair, actually.
Of course it is. Of course it is.
Of course it is.
Casually. She, like, tree hops to resand. He's like, oh, hey, oh, good, you got it. And she's like, what the fuck? What the actual fuck? And he's like,
where you been, loco?
Yeah. Where the hell you been, loca? And she's like, I've been in the chimney full of human hair, Reese, and that's where I've been. He's like, ew, gross.
Oh my God.
Oh God.
Picturing Reese in a tree being like, where the hell you been, loca? Is the best thing I've ever thought about.
So he winnows them back to the House of Wind and Amarin just goes, you smell like barbecue. Which
is... But I'm sure like literally to Amarin, she smells delicious.
I'm sure she does.
Oh yeah. Amarin's like, ooh, that's.
Amarin's like, I got a little taste of you.
Who's in the mood for some BBQ? I love it. Okay. And so Amarin snaps her fingers to like clean Feyre and do the magic eraser cleaning thing. But Feyre can still feel the grease on her skin. What do we need to be doing, friends?
Water and soap.
Bathing with hot water and soap. I need her to get into a bath.
Dawn, preferably, because Dawn is what they use in oil spills.
That's right.
The oil right off.
Yeah, I see it in the commercials with the baby ducks.
That's right. It works.
It works.
Guys, this is not enough. If you can feel the grease on you, go take a bath. I'm sorry. I'm here.
The other day we made bacon and just the bacon fat on the pan on my hands. I was like, I got to cut my hands off.
Yeah.
I can't. It won't come off.
It's so extreme.
I can't do it. It's disgusting.
No, legitimately, I washed my hands like 5 times. Yeah. I was like, what do I do? Take a shower?
Now imagine that plus hair.
Whole body. Hair.
Hair. I want to die. I hate it so much.
Okay, well, you know what doesn't make me want to die?
What?
Is this sexy moment before the Weaver, and it's in preparation to get to the Weaver, mm-hmm. that we just have to pause here and talk about because it is such a good and like famous Rhysand quote moment. So Rhysand shows up to Feyre's room. He's helping her strap on like knives because she's allowed to bring certain knives into the Weaver's cottage because the Weaver will recognize those as like just cutlery. Or something.
Okay.
I don't know. Like she won't recognize it as like necessarily a weapon. Mm. He is strapping fighting knives onto Feyre's thighs. And Feyre is like, so I'm your huntress and thief. His hand slid down to cup the backs of my knees. As he said with a roguish grin, you are my salvation, Feyre.
My salvation, Feyre, darling.
It is so dramatic, but also like so hot.
God,
oh, it's so hot.
So good.
Not I love you, not I'm obsessed with you. It's you are my salvation. Salvation. That's the bar, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right.
It's unattainable. It's unfair.
Good luck. But also really important to note here that he's kneeling. We've already had the nightmare scene. We already know that he will not kneel except for his crown,
yep.
And his mate.
And his mate.
That's right.
Okay, so two important things here that we learn after they get back from the Weaver's cottage. Rhysand needed to know if Feyre could use her abilities to detect things from various courts, which obviously she can. Mm-hmm. And this is going to be very, very handy when we go to the summer court and Feyre can like suss out where the Book of Breathings are.
Ping that iPhone. Ping that Apple AirTag.
Let me find my iPhone. Yep, AirTag it. Also, he wanted her to master her panic. Like, that was another big reason that we went to the Weaver. And this quote is so funny to me. She comes back and she's like, I could have used some help. And he literally just looks at her and he goes, you survived. But did you die?
Did you die, though?
But did you die?
Rhysand. Even Amarin was like, wow, Rhys. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's intense.
Cassie and everybody literally is like, dude, what the fuck?
Like, yeah. Come on now. You have Amarin is saying it. Like, that's...
For real.
Mm-hmm. For real.
Yeah. But also, this is important because it's actually highlighting one of Rhysand's big fears, right? He has been watching the woman he loves waste away in the spring court. Mm-hmm. He's the one who realizes she stopped fighting and that she forgets to use her magic and strength when she needs it. We specifically see this later with the Adder when the Adder attacks Feyre in the human realm, right? She realizes that she forgot to fight back in that moment. When the Adder shows up, she freezes and... Rhysand, we're going to talk about this a little bit in a minute, but Rhysand does kind of use her as bait a little bit mm-hmm. to get the Adder there. It's all kind of part of his plan, but it also is part of his plan to help her realize that she can fight back. And Feyre realizes that she didn't. She didn't use the tools in her arsenal. Mm-hmm. And what Rhysand says to her is, yes, you forgot that strength and that you can burn and become darkness and grow claws. You forgot. You stopped fighting. And this just goes back to what he kept seeing every time he would call in the bargain and she'd come from the spring court and she was just the shell of a human.
Mm-hmm.
And he, yes, he gives her space to heal. Yes, he gives her space to come into her own. But he also wants to know that she is coming out of that dark space, that she is going to fight back. Mm-hmm. Because remember, he hears her inner thoughts earlier when they're walking around Valeris and she's like, maybe I'm not worth it. And that terrifies him.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, no. You are fucking worth it and you will fight back.
Yeah.
So help me God.
If it is the last thing I do.
If I have to put you in a chimney of hair to do it, I will do that.
Yeah.
I will make that sacrifice.
I'll do it.
I'll do it.
I will.
Don't tempt me with a good time.
That was entertaining as hell to watch, okay?
Oh, God.
Gross, but whatever. And of course, we learn later that the ring that Feyre got out of the cottage, made of sapphire so dark it was almost black and with the hints of an 8-pointed star, was actually a family heirloom passed down from Rhys's mother.
I love it.
So this is what Rhys says. My mother gave it to the Weaver, and then she told me that if I were to marry or mate, then the female would either have to be smart or strong enough to get it back. And if the female wasn't either of those things, then she wouldn't survive the marriage.
I mean.
Wow.
Okay.
Does this woman exist? I mean, clearly she doesn't Feyre, but really?
Wow.
Also, survive the marriage is some harsh verbiage there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
This is a classic mother-in-law. Like, my son is worth you almost dying and being covered in human fat.
Yeah, I mean.
Right?
If you can't do that, you're not worthy.
What an interesting challenge you've set for her.
I love the headcanon that if his sister was still alive, that like some guy at some point wanted to date her and Reese was like, yeah, I'll tell you where a ring is. You go get it. Just go get it. See if you can get it.
Go get it.
Yeah, have fun.
And then the sister's like, Reese, are you literally sending him to die? He's like, well, yeah, you know.
If he dies, that's his own fault.
Mom said.
Mother made Pharaoh do it.
That's
yep.
It's his turn.
It's what we all must do.
That's right.
Okay, so guys, next up, let's talk about some of our favorite Pharaoh and Reese and Faye Sand growth moments as a couple. Because really watching them grow together into this like power couple that we know and we love is truly one of the greatest joys of this book as a whole. Mm-hmm. So let's start off with a hugely pivotal moment in their relationship. Whew. Guys, okay. Their big fight after they visit the Hewn City. I'm really excited to deep dive this. Okay, but PSA, do not worry, listeners. We will be deep diving all the sexy Court of Nightmares stuff next week. Hold your horses. It will be coming, I promise.
Yep.
Okay. Coming. Okay.
Oh my God.
I wasn't going to say it, but it just like happened. So,
the most okay. 16-year-old like, immature. That was hilarious.
Okay, but for now, we want to focus on what happens afterwards. So as a reminder, while at the Court of Nightmares, Kier says to Pharaoh, quote, you'll get what's coming to you, whore. Okay.
Fighting words.
Yep. Which obviously triggers a visceral reaction in Reese. Duh. He goes on to, you know, make Kier apologize, break his arm in four places, and then threatens to, quote, carve him into pieces if he hears that Kier saw a healer. So, you know, casual Tuesday.
Yeah.
And honestly, it's all very well deserved and it's all very sexy. But it's also the exact version of himself he didn't want Pharaoh to see. So they leave Hewn City, but instead of winnowing back to Velaris, Reese takes her to a mountain lake so they can debrief a little bit. And he's literally shaking. He's immediately apologizing. And Pharaoh notes, quote, I've never seen him so raw, so stumbling.
Yeah. Oh!
And Reese is embarrassed by how he lost control. And he's terrified that Pharaoh will see him as a monster again. He's not sorry for what he did, but he is sorry that she witnessed it. Mm-hmm. He tells her, quote, I shouldn't have let you come. I shouldn't have let you go, let you see that part of us, of me. Which the phrasing's not ideal, babe.
Yeah, I shouldn't have let you go is...
Yeah, it immediately sends Pharaoh spiraling. It triggers her to right back in the Spring Court. She's terrified now that his instinct to protect her will come at the cost of her agency.
Yeah.
And she's still too raw and wounded to offer him the trust he's actually earned. She's just in sheer panic. This is happening again. Mm-hmm. That's her only example. She doesn't understand what else could happen. She just panics that it might be happening again.
Yeah.
So she starts begging him to not start protecting her, to not stop telling her things, not stop inviting her on these missions. And she's so lost in her panic, she doesn't actually understand that's not what he's saying, but fine.
Yeah.
And Reese, at this direct comparison to Tamlin, loses it. Mm-hmm. Quote, darkness rippled and wings tore from his back. I am not him. Reese breathes. I will never be him. Act like him. He locked you up and let you wither and die. Stop comparing me to him. Mm. You think I don't know how stories get written, how this story will be written? Reese put his hands on his chest, his face more open, more anguished than I'd ever seen it. I am the Dark Lord who stole away the Bride of Spring. Mm. I am a demon and a nightmare, and I will meet a bad end. He is the Golden Prince, the hero who will get to keep you as his reward for not dying of stupidity and arrogance. God, it's so good and heartbreaking.
It's so good.
So, okay, from here, the fight escalates quickly, but it really comes to a head when Reese asks Pharaoh what it is she really wants. Mm-hmm. And at this point, I do think she knows. I think she knows she wants him, but she's just not ready to admit it yet. Mm-hmm. And we see evidence of this the chapter before, because she's on the throne. Reese is touching her. She's having a lovely time. She's unleashing. She's feeling alive. All these things are happening. And all of a sudden, she feels guilty.
Yeah.
She has this wave of nausea, of guilt for Reese's hands being on her because, quote, when Tamlin and I were barely, end quote. I'm assuming that was like, we're barely 2 months out of being together when I was just barely 2 months out of this engagement.
Yeah.
She's still healing and she still feels like she shouldn't want to be with Reese. So, she says nothing.
Yeah.
And his response is also not kind. His laugh was bitter, soft. I thought so. Perhaps he should take some time to figure that out one of these days. Which, yeah. And I think this jab from Reese really throws her. He's never pushed her like this in this tone. Like, it feels different. Mm-hmm. And it puts her on the defensive. So she lashes out, specifically hitting him where she knows it will hurt him the most. Mm-hmm. And she says, quote, perhaps I don't know what I want, but at least I don't hide what I am behind a mask. What about letting your friends see your real face? Guys, okay. But maybe it would be easier not to, because what if you did let someone in? And what if they saw everything and still walked away? Who could blame them? Who would want to bother with that sort of mess? He flinched. The most powerful High Lord in history flinched. And I knew I'd hit hard and deep, too hard.
This is like so much harder to, like, when you read it again and going back to, like, Kim, what you were saying earlier, just the Nesta of it all.
That's a very Nesta thing to say.
It's so Nesta.
To go too far and they get backed into a corner and then it's like they come with their claws out.
Yes.
Yes.
It's, what does she say? I was the quote from the Weaver, like, I was a wolf and if I was backed into a corner, I would bite.
That's what she's doing.
Totally.
It's exactly what's happening, because we know specifically that she already does know this is one of his fears, because a chapter before this, in the throne room scene, she has the thought and wonders, maybe Rhys doesn't have the self-worth I think he does. Maybe the swagger is hiding that. She wonders that. And her response is then to look at him and mind speak to him. I see what's beneath your mask. I see you and you don't scare me. Like, she knows this is a fear.
Yeah. Yeah.
And instead, I think it's her lashing out and on the defensive. But I also think she's talking about herself. She's misplacing her own emotions. She's like, who would want to bother with that sort of mess? You know, I do think she's talking about her own.
I agree.
Her own insecurity.
And isn't that a classic thing that people do when, like, take a look in the mirror? Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of times when you lash out at somebody that you love or that you care about, a lot of times it's about yourself.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Again, this is what Nesta does in Akasoff to Cassian. She is so angry, and nobody hates Nesta more than she hates herself. Mm-hmm. And that's where a majority of her anger comes from. And Feyre here is so terrified of, like, what she sees when she closes her eyes at night and what she has done in the last few months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, like, yeah, no, I'm lashing out and I'm really mad at Tamlin, but you're here. So I'm going to be mad at you.
Yep.
Exactly. But yeah, so this is a really pivotal moment for them. They're learning how to fight. They're learning how to not cut each other down, but also they're building up this honesty that at some point in their relationship, after they've built also the trust, becomes something really pivotal to them as a couple that they cherish, that they can be open and honest with each other even when it's hard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yes, okay, so next up in our greatest hits, Kim, take us through a not so great night for Feyre.
Yes. So sweetest Feyre is still having nightmares, and now she's obviously in the same house as Rhysand. Mm-hmm. And she has a nightmare, and Rhysand wakes up when he hears Feyre screaming. Mm-hmm. And once again, unlike Tamlin, he goes to her. He doesn't let her suffer alone. He's screaming her name to wake up. And this is what Feyre says. The voice was at once the night and the dawn and the stars and the earth, and every inch of my body calmed at the primal dominance in it.
Oh my goodness.
Okay.
Oh my God, it's so good.
And so she wakes up and she immediately is throwing up, and she's so ashamed of it. She feels so shameful because Tamlin straight up at times ignored her throwing up. He tried to act like it wasn't happening. We know he wasn't asleep. We know he heard her, but he just acted like it wasn't happening. Mm-hmm. What does Rhysand do? He immediately goes in there with her and he starts holding her hair, and he can tell that she's obviously feeling, that's a very vulnerable, we've all been there. Okay, let's just be honest. We've all been there. Okay. Yep.
100%.
It's a very vulnerable position for you to be in. You feel like you are quite literally at rock bottom.
Yeah.
And so he's holding her hair back and he's holding her through the grief and terror, and he wants to share something vulnerable of his own to make her feel less alone. Ugh. And Rhys says, I have this dream, he said, as I retched again, holding my hair. He's holding her hair back. We'd love to see it. And he says, where it's not me stuck under her, but Cassian or Asriel.
Oh.
Guys, the fact that a nightmare of his is that it's his brother stuck under Amarantha and not him.
And that he, in this moment, failed them.
Yeah.
Like, that is what his biggest, his fear is. And
yes,
he could never fail them. It's just,
no.
Oh, God.
And this is what Rhysand and we'll continue to explore, but, like, his MO is, it's hard for him to ask for help. Mm-hmm. He did all of this to save everybody. And that's his biggest fear, is that if he hadn't been able to do it, then the people he cares and loves the most would have been in his stead.
Yep.
And he'd rather sacrifice himself 10 times over than see anybody he cares and loves be hurt.
Absolutely.
Well, I think his self-worth is so low. I think he actually thinks that is a way better trade.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, what's another one, Anna?
Okay, so one of my favorite moments with Feyre and Rhysand, again, we're back in the sparring ring, guys.
Yep.
She had just opened up, actually the quote that I read earlier, she had just opened up to Cassian and she's been punching and punching and she's just defeated, y'all. She is just, this is the beautiful moment where she and Rhysand have this kind of talk about, like, the shadows that she exhibits that she uses from his magic, right? His drop of magic. And he talks about there being a difference between, like, dark shadows and light shadows and how, like, one can be calm and one can be scary. And it's just this beautiful moment between the two of them. And she says out loud for the first time, I killed them. and she's talking about the two fairies. And this is really the first time that she started to voice it. Mm-hmm. And then she says, it should have been me. Mm-hmm. And this is, I think, the deep, darkest fear that we know has been under the surface, but she's never voiced out loud. Mm-hmm. And Cassian kind of is like, yo, I'm going to let Rhysand take the reins on this one. Like, yeah. Come claim your mate, dude. Yep. I think she needs you now.
Tap in.
Oh, God. And she's also like burning through the pads, punching.
Yes.
And he's just like, keep going. It's okay. Keep going.
He's like, I can take it.
I can take it. Cassian. God, I love him so much. Lord of Bloodshed.
He's the best.
Oh.
Rhysand steps in. And again, rather than just ignoring her pain, he walks alongside her and he shares what is also a fear and a grief and a vulnerability of his. Mm-hmm. And is very honest. He says, you will feel that way every day for the rest of your life. Rhysand said, his eyes were soft. I tried to look away, but he held my chin firm. And I know this because I have felt that way every day since my mother and sister were slaughtered and I had to bury them myself. And even retribution didn't fix it. He wiped away the tears on one cheek, then another. You can either let it wreck you, let it get you killed like it nearly did with the Weaver, or you can learn to live with it. I'm sorry I didn't find a way to spare you from what happened under the mountain, Rhysand said with equal quiet. From dying, from wanting to die. I have two kinds of nightmares. The ones where I am again Amarantha's whore, or my friends are, and the ones where I hear your neck snap and see the light leave your eyes.
Oh, God.
Oh, Rhys.
Y'all, if in that moment Feyre did not, if she had just looked at that sentence a little bit deeper.
Uh-huh.
I think we all would have realized.
We all would have realized it.
Yep.
Goddamn. And the light leave your eyes.
Oh, it's so sad.
It's so beautiful and so sad. But again, this is just, I mean, we've ad nauseum discussed Tamlin at this point. But it just goes back to like the fact that Tamlin does not have the capability or the growth to be able to look at Feyre and talk about these things openly. Mm-hmm. And Rhysand does.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's a product of, I think, his friends, his mother, his upbringing, the fact that he's okay with his emotions. Like, you know, it's like a little boy who was told it's okay to cry.
Yeah,
exactly.
And the difference is Tamlin grew up in a home where boys will be boys and you put up a stiff upper lip.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Exactly. I love that moment. It's really a moment where, as the reader, you fall in love with Rhys right along with her with that vulnerability. Yeah, like, absolutely. You're falling in love with him.
Absolutely.
Okay, it is time to go to the summer court and get on the pleasure barge. Hop on, ladies. Let's go.
I do, like, this is so fun. I really feel like we're on the Magic School Bus. We've gone to the Bone Cover. We've gone to the Weaver.
Yeah.
And now we're going to the summer court.
Which, let's be honest, out of the three, I think we were all picking the summer court out of this.
100%.
Oh, yeah. Take me to Yacht Week. Let's go.
I love a boat.
I have decided that all the courts, the summer court is where I would absolutely want to live out of
all of them. I would thrive there.
I think we would do so well there. Like, there's oceans. It's just beautiful. Everything's
charcuterie board.
Oh, God,
crisp,
yes.
Crisp glass of rosé or
yes.
Champs.
Oh, yes.
Oh, God. It's beautiful.
I'd be a little worried about the temp, but as long as it's not too hot, I think I'd be okay.
I like to think that he keeps it like a crisp 78.
Yes. Like, and there's a nice breeze. Nice. There's a nice breeze. Maybe it's a little chilly at night.
Yeah. It's no humidity.
No.
No humidity.
No.
I like how you said he keeps it as if Tarquin has the AC unit for the whole
I think so.
Yeah,
court.
I think he does.
Yeah.
I think he does.
Yeah.
I think he does.
I know. I think it all. Yeah.
I think he just controls it constantly.
Like Rhysand keeps the house warm.
Right. Exactly. Okay. So we are going to the summer court, but we're also, it's a little bit of pleasure, a little bit of business. Okay. Because they do unfortunately need to steal the Book of Breathings and Tarquin has it somewhere in his court. They don't know where Feyre's going to use her, you know, Apple AirTag skills.
Yeah.
But they also need to meet Tarquin in his court.
Yeah.
But what Feyre does not expect about this is how easy it is to like Tarquin. He's young. He's idealistic. He wants to break down the barriers between high Fey and lesser Fey.
Yes, he does.
He's lovely. He's just lovely.
He's lovely. He's gorgeous. He's sweet.
Yeah, he's not bad to look at.
Not bad to look at, ladies. That's all I'm going to say. Okay, not bad to look at. And he's kind. He's a kind person. Yeah. You can tell he's not playing games. He actually does seem to believe in something better. Mm-hmm. There's more to this life that they live. It doesn't have to be this way. And it's also one of the first times that someone says out loud what Feyre is starting to feel, that Rhysand isn't the villain he pretends to be. Because Tarquin remembers under the mountain, Rhys helped shield the Summer Court's rebellion. And Feyre is really starting to see it too, that everything with Rhys is very intentional. He wears the mask because someone has to wear it. Mm-hmm. And this is also the first time we're getting some jealousy between Feyre and Rhysand, which is so fun to see.
God, it's So fun.
Yeah. So Feyre sees Cressida flirting with Rhysand, and Rhysand is jealous because she smiles for Tarquin, and he has never gotten to see that smile for him.
I love
okay. That. So he's like, I'm jealous that you smiled at Tarquin, because he also overheard what she said to him on the pleasure barge, that it would be very easy to love him.
Mm.
And this is really sad for Rhys, because he knows that Rhysand comes with a lot of baggage, okay? Yeah. And anyone that he mates or marries will be in danger, and his own offspring will even be hunted simply because of who he is.
Yeah.
And this is what he says about Tarquin. Rhys says, he will never know what it's like to look at the night sky and wish.
Oh.
And this is in Feyre's head. The court of dreams, the people who knew that there was a price and one worth paying for that dream, the bastard-born warriors, the Illyrian half-breed, the monster trapped in a beautiful body, the dreamer born into a court of nightmares, and the huntress with an artist's soul. And perhaps because it was the most vulnerable thing he'd said to me, perhaps it was the burning in my eyes, but I walked to where he stood over the little bar. I met his stare as I clinked my glass against his, the crystal ringing clear and bright over the crashing sea far below, and said, to the people who look at the stars and wish, Reed. He picked up his glass, his gaze so piercing that I wondered why I had bothered blushing at all for Tarquin. Rhys clinked his glass against mine, to the stars who listen and the dreams that are answered.
I mean, oh. Is there a more iconic line?
No.
I'll wait.
No.
No.
Oh.
Absolutely not. That is so good. Every time. It gets me every single time.
Yeah, it's so beautiful.
It's so beautiful. It's such a pivotal moment for them.
Huge.
With each other. It's huge.
I also think it's huge for Feyre. I know on Patreon we have a whole SJM series episode covering the summer court. So
yeah,
I won't harp on it too much because I think we really go into it there. But I love the way that Feyre puts herself in the court of dreams in this scene for the first time.
Yes.
She's listing off all of them and then includes herself as the huntress, as if she is starting to see that she is a part of this court and the family.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that, Christina. That's a great point.
Yeah, I love that.
Okay, so we're going to move through this because we've got some ground to cover, but essentially they do steal the book from the temple that was out on the water that Feyre did finally find. There's a tiny little mishap between Amarin and Feyre. They do almost die. They almost drown.
It's casual.
It's casual. It's very stressful, actually. But the water wraiths save Feyre and Amarin, repaying the debt from the tithe.
Yes, we love to see it. Full circle.
Yes, Feyre gave those water wraiths in the spring court. She gave them her jewelry at the tithe so they could pay Tamlin fish that he didn't need. And they were like, we won't forget it. And they don't. And they save them. And it's...
I love it.
Oh, God. It was stressful. It was beautiful. I love that full circle moment. But Feyre does not feel great about stealing the book. She feels really icky because she really did like Tarquin. And Rhysand feels the same way. I think he really saw a connection between him and Tarquin. And he was excited about having an ally. Mm. But what is it, ladies?
War times.
War times.
War times. And we have to do what we have to do. Okay?
Yeah. Sure do. This is the first time I think that Feyre has had to be like, oh, I have to be like a Slytherin though.
Yeah.
Like I don't want to be.
Mm-hmm. I know.
But I have to do the things. Because she also goes into Tarquin's mind at some point.
Yes.
And makes him believe her, makes him not question why she's asking about the temple. So
yeah. Yeah.
I think there were a few lines that, you know, in Rhys's mind, like this is just, we got to do what we got to do.
Absolutely.
And this is the first time I think she's had to really do it too.
Yeah. And I think Rhysand, it's like, this all goes back to him and the mask that he's worn, right? If he was to take the mask off for the first time with Tarquin, Tarquin wouldn't believe him, even though Tarquin has said that he thinks that there is more to Rhysand than he lets on.
Right.
Rhysand's not ready to do that yet. Rhysand's not ready to, like, take off everything, right? It takes him till the very end when he's willing to show the queens the Velaris, right?
Right, right.
But that's, I think, what eats at him is, like, am I making the right decision? Is this mask that I'm wearing a good thing? And that's what we'll see in Akawar when Feyre's like, I think it's time.
Yeah.
I think we have to trust our allies.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't just be this big, bad, scary.
Right. Because if they had asked Tarquin for the book, do you guys think he would have given it to them?
No.
I don't think he would have given it to him in this situation.
Yeah.
Because I think he wouldn't have fully trusted Rhysand.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Feyre, in her idealization of it, thinks that he would have.
I don't.
Because I think Tarquin, in his heart, if I think like the Tarquin that sees Rhysand later, yes, I think Tarquin would have given it to him.
Mm-hmm.
But Tarquin doesn't know any better. He can only work with what Rhysand has shown him.
Totally.
Right. I like to think that he would be open to, like, he would listen to Feyre and, like, pretty much if they presented to him what they present to the mortal queens, I would like to think that Tarquin would agree with them. But I think that he is such a new High Lord. You know, there's a comment where they're like, these are his first time hosting other High Lords and his whole little team is like stressed about him even doing it. Like, I think he's so unchallenged and so new that I think he would feel stressed out about making that decision himself without his cousin and stuff. And I don't think anyone else feels that same amount of empathy.
He says at one point to Feyre, I don't know how to play this game. I'm still learning. He's 80 years old, guys. That is a baby. Okay.
Oh God, he's a toddler. He's a toddler.
He's 80 years old. He's a wee baby.
He's a wee baby. Okay. He's basically 16.
Yeah.
He is a child king.
Yeah.
I would like to think if they asked him and he said like, hell no, leave. And then they go back and they're like, oh no. And then at some point he's like, fine, here. I think he would have.
I think if they had used the Veritas orb with him and he had seen Velaris, that he would have agreed.
Yeah.
But I think if Feyre had come out right here and just presented everything that they now know, but without showing him Velaris, that's where I think he would have been like, I'm not sure, guys.
I need a minute.
Like, I'm willing to listen to you, but I'm not going to give it to you right now.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
I agree. Okay, so that is going to be it for this week's episode. Stay tuned for next week where we will cover the sexy throne room scene at the Court of Nightmares, Starfall, and the Suriel spilling the most epic tea of all time.
Yay! Cannot wait, guys. Bye.
Well, friends, that wraps up another episode of Flights of Fantasy Podcast. Don't forget to join our book club community on Instagram and TikTok at Flights of Fantasy Podcast, where you can share your thoughts, theories, and favorite moments with us and fellow listeners. We'd love to hear from you. If you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and review us on your favorite podcast platform. Your support helps us spread the magic of romanticism to even more book lovers. Until next time, keep dreaming, keep reading, and remember, every good story deserves to take flight.